Hello everyone, welcome to another live interview. I am here with Angelina Gabrielle. She is running for the 6th branch judge here in Kenosha, Wisconsin for the circuit court judge. As you all know, we've been interviewing all of the candidates. We want to make sure that everybody has a clear understanding of what they represent, what they feel like they're going to bring to the seat, and why they feel they are the best person for the job. So, Angelina, thank you so much for taking some time out to come talk to us here. Before we get into, like, you know, the juicy stuff, how about you just kind of give us a rundown of your background, you know, growing up and stuff like that?
Sure, and thanks for having me on. I think it's really great that you're doing this and giving people an opportunity to learn about the candidates, because otherwise it's really hard to get information on people, more than just a little sound bite, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, lived there with my dad and my brother and my mom. My dad was an immigrant from Italy. My mom was from Switzerland. We lived there, well, my parents divorced when I was 11. So after the divorce, we lived with my dad, and he really wanted to get us out of the city, out of Brooklyn, into someplace safer. And so finally, when I was 16 in high school, he moved us to Kenosha. And he moved us here because his sister lived here with her husband and her daughter, and he wanted to be somewhere safer and somewhere near family. And the rest of his family was still back in Italy, little mountain village in southern Italy. So I went to 2 years of high school here in Kenosha, Bradford High School. And then I went to Parkside for 2 years, lived at home. Dad was very protective, probably overprotective. And then I transferred to UW-Madison. So I went to UW-Madison and graduated from there with a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science, and decided to go to law school right away. I knew I wanted to be a lawyer from when I was in fifth grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed the mysteries, the mystery part of it all, trying to figure things out and put pieces of puzzles together. So I went to UW-Madison for law school for 3 years. And while I was there, I worked through school. I worked in a department store selling shoes. Then I was asked to be a teaching assistant by some of the law professors for an undergraduate class that they taught. So I did that for a year or a semester, maybe a year, I can't remember now. And then I was interning at the district attorney's office during summers. And so when I graduated, I applied for a position at the Kenosha County District Attorney's Office, and they hired me, and I came back, and I have been a prosecutor for 25 years. I worked at the District Attorney's Office in Kenosha until 2014, and then I was hired at the Attorney General's Office in Madison and worked there for 2 years. While I was there, I was prosecuting felony cases across the state of Wisconsin, not just Kenosha, and prosecuting sexually violent persons cases. So I don't know if you've heard of Chapter 980. So those are cases where after someone has been convicted and they serve their sentence in prison, if they're still, they're evaluated, and if they're deemed they're still a risk of sexually assaulting other people, then they can bring a commitment process. And so I was involved in those and had a few of those trials across the state.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a very important job to have.
Yeah, it was really, it felt good. And it was kind of nice because it was actually a case that at that point didn't have any victims. You know, before that, before I went to the Attorney General's office, I was in juvenile court for a while prosecuting cases of kids who had been sexually assaulted or abused or neglected. And then I went to criminal court and I was prosecuting a lot of sexual assault cases. And they're so gut-wrenching because, you know, these victims have been so traumatized by the sexual assault. And, you know, children are discouraged from coming forward and they're afraid. And so sometimes it takes several years for them to come forward and they're still afraid. And then you have to tell them, well, okay, now that you were brave enough to come forward and tell the police what happened and tell the interviewer what happened, you're going to have to go to court and you'll have to tell what happened again in front of a bunch of strangers. So it was, you know, it was rewarding, but it was also very emotionally challenging. So the nice thing about these 980 cases was that there were no children who I had to talk to. It was just all doctors and medical experts and prison officials and social workers. So that was kind of, you know, that was a little easier that way. So then when Mike Gravely was elected district attorney in 2016, he asked if I would come back as his deputy district attorney. That's his second in command. And so I agreed to do that. You know, I think Mike Gravely is a great guy and has been such a great role model over the years that I was real happy to come back and work for him. And let's see. So I've been deputy DA since then. I have three kids, two sons of my own. One is a senior at Tremper High School. One is at UW-Milwaukee. And then I have a foster son who lived with us for 3 years. I consider him part of our family. He's in the U.S. Air Force now and married and having a baby just doing awesome. So yeah, so that's my history.
Nice. That's really cool. Yeah. So yeah, it seems like you've been involved for quite a while. Like you said, you have the 25 years experience as a prosecutor and a lawyer, and then working in the DA's directly with the DA, which is, you know, good, because then, I mean, that's, I would imagine, good experience to get, you know, working, you know, right under the head person that's handling, you know, a lot of big cases. Getting that experience, getting to see how things operate, you know, and then also just kind of working with the DOJ too. I just feel like that would be cool just to get called up and be like, oh man, you really want me?
So yeah, that's cool. That's exactly how it felt, because, you know, when you're an assistant DA for so long, you know, we would go to conferences and we were always taught by the assistant attorney generals. And I just thought, oh God, that they're so awesome. They're just like the cream of the crop up there and just a really smart group of people and great lawyers. And so when I decided to apply and they hired me, it was just, it felt really good. And I learned a lot while I was there too, which was important to me to keep learning and keep improving myself and improving my skills. So it was great to do that. And yeah, coming back and working with Mike over the last 4 years has been really great too. He's just a really ethical prosecutor who has the good of the community in mind. And so it's been really good for me to watch and learn from him. And like you said, we do handle the most important cases. He and I handle almost all the homicide cases that happen in Kenosha County. So, you know, and we like to be involved from the very beginning. We think it's important for us to be there as soon as we can possibly be there. So there, the police officers, sheriff's department, they're told, as soon as you know this is a homicide, you call one of us. And so, like, I've been called at 2 a.m. and, you know, I whisper to my kids, I'll be back in a little while. And then I leave, and that's been, you know, I don't want to get gory, but, you know, in a couple times we get there so early, the body is still there. But, it's tragic, but it's really good for us to be able to see it firsthand. And then we work real closely with the detectives to kind of make sure it gets investigated, or that, you know, we collaborate on the investigation so that we have a solid case, you know, because obviously, you know, killing someone and the loss of life is just the worst thing you can do. So we want to make sure we do it right when we prosecute it.
And I imagine being able to arrive on the scene early, even if you have to experience stuff that most people probably wouldn't ever want to see, it can just help you kind of get a better picture of the scene and, yes, you know, everything, because arriving there and things have already been moved around and stuff like that, it's, you know, you don't really get the full effect,
exactly.
I would imagine.
Yes.
So what is, what's it been like, kind of, because I know the position is such an important position, you know, working as the DA or even working directly under the DA as the assistant DA. And, you know, I imagine there's a lot of pressure because a lot of the cases that you do end up handling, some of them may be high profile, some of them may be, you know, just local things. But there's always kind of opinions and things that get thrown out, people place blame and stuff like that. How do you stay just straight and narrow and kind of just keep your head on and kind of just keep the blinders on and just get the job done? Because I imagine it's a very stressful job to have, even outside of just the job itself.
Right. It is a stressful job. You know, I think for me, I just keep focused on what I think is the right thing. You know, I focus on what are the facts, what is the law, and then what is the outcome that should come from that. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of pressure because when it is, in particular in homicide cases or sexual assault cases, you have family members who, like, they think this is, you have to bring their son, their daughter justice.
Right.
And so, you know, what I do is I just work a lot. You know, I prepare a lot. I spend weekends, nights, vacations. I've brought files with me on vacation so that I can be well prepared, because it's just important to me that I do it right. And not having that level of preparation stresses me out more, you know, than just saying, oh, I'm just going to take the night off and just chill. You know, I don't work that way. I feel like, okay, if I can just do a little bit so I feel a little like I'm working towards being completely prepared, then that's what I'm going to do. I tell this story, but last year was my 50th birthday. Yes, I'm...
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm,
next week will be 51.
I wouldn't even guess that. So, happy birthday.
Thank you. So I was supposed to go on a vacation with some friends to Puerto Vallarta, and I had trials scheduled the week before the vacation, and then I had a trial scheduled, I think, two weeks after I was supposed to come back, and I just felt like I can't do it. Like, I need this week in between to get really ready for the next one. I need to meet with witnesses, you know, you need to get them, remind them, refresh them, prepare them. Everyone's all scared about testifying. And so I canceled my trip.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it was a little bit of a sacrifice, but it was worth it because I felt really prepared and confident when I went to court. And, you know, the family, you know, when you get that guilty verdict, the family is just so happy. You're like the best person in the world to them. And what great validation is there? You know, that's just, it's a really good feeling.
Yeah, and it seems like you are completely committed to serving the community then.
Cause, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if I would, if I would just set my trip aside to, but I mean, maybe. I'm glad you mentioned that though, because that does kind of, you know, like pinpoints kind of on the work ethic. And especially in a position, you know, if you're looking at being the judge, you want to make sure you have all of the information. At least that's, as a member of the public, I would hope that, you know, you would take the time, make sure that you're looking at all of the facts and not just saying, I'll get to this when I have time. And then,
right.
You know, then the day of court comes and it's like, maybe you didn't really. So you're just going to kind of go off with the little information that you have. So, and again, that's kind of why I like having these conversations, to let people hear these types of things, because little things like that actually do matter, you know, being committed to your job, being able to make sacrifices, even being, you know, a parent and having to get up in the middle of the night and just leave and just say, hey, you know, I'll be back in a little bit,
right.
You know, make sure they're squared away. And then maybe it's a little bit, maybe you end up, you know, being out for like 5 hours, or you don't end up getting to go to sleep. But I mean, that's a sacrifice that you're doing for the community. So you can't do anything but appreciate it as a member of the community. So thank you for actually, you know, doing your job to the best of your ability.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So what do you, just to kind of make it a little more personal, I suppose, how have they handled that? You know, because, I mean, you are sacrificing a lot for the community. Are they, I mean, I saw photos like, I believe one of your sons made sure he nominated you. He signed the paperwork and stuff like that. So I imagine they really love you and they understand everything. But how's that been kind of, you know, navigating work and everything with your family?
Yeah, they've been great. They're so used to it. And of course I find time to spend with them. And as they get older, now I'm begging them for some time together. When they were younger, it was real easy. You know, let's just go have a movie night or let's play some games. But, you know, now with a 18-year-old and a 21-year-old, they're really not wanting to spend much time with me, which makes me sad. But, you know, every once in a while they'll throw me a bone and watch a movie with me. And, you know, we have dinner together every night. So to me, that's really important. So every night when they're not with their dad, we have dinner together and we have talk. And they think my cases are interesting. You know, I don't talk about all of them, but certain ones I talk about. And, you know, when I thought about running for judge, I talked to them about it and I said, you know, what do you think? And they're like, yeah, you should do this. Why wouldn't you, is what they said. And I'm like, well, there's a lot at stake, you know, with running for judge. But, you know, I was happy to have their support and their encouragement, and they think it's pretty cool. Awesome. And they think what I do is pretty cool. And I'm happy that I feel like I was a good role model to them. You know, it's like, you know, I'm your mom and I kind of do cool stuff when I'm in court.
So what was it that made you decide that you wanted to run for judge? Because, I mean, it is, not only do you have pretty big shoes to fill with the person that you will be replacing, but then also, like you said, it is like it's a very important position. It's not an easy task to run for anything, right. Let alone a position like, you know, running for judge. Mm-hmm. So what was it that made you say, yeah, I think we're going to do this?
Okay, so there are a few reasons. Over the last year, maybe more, many people have come to me, including some of the judges, to say, you should think about this. You should run for judge when you have the opportunity, or put in for it when you have the opportunity. You know, your career is well established, you're well known, you know, you are committed, you're passionate. We need someone like this to be judge in Kenosha, which was, you know, so flattering to hear, because, you know, when I go to court, I think, well, I'm doing my job. But to have judges say to me, yeah, you are exceptionally qualified, you should do this. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. And then when I heard Judge Wagner was retiring, I just thought, okay, this is a sign now, right? Because Judge Wagner is all those things I just described. She has been committed and passionate and open-minded and compassionate? and just, I love her attitude in court. It's very much, let's get it done. You know, I don't want to put this over. I know your time is valuable. Your time is valuable. All our time is valuable. Let's do what we can do right now. And so when I heard she was retiring, I thought, okay, this is it. Like, this is my sign. These are the shoes that I want to fill. I want to fill the void that Judge Wagner is going to leave behind, because I feel like Kenosha deserves a judge who is passionate and committed and will work really hard and really try to do the right thing every day and keep an open mind to new solutions and new ways of doing things.
Yeah, and that's kind of gets us in another direction of, like, things are, like we mentioned briefly before we started, how things kind of have been changing and evolving, and, you know, things operate a lot differently, like even how court is kind of being handled now during the pandemic. Things have kind of been shaken up and people have had to kind of change things on a whim to be able to, you know, have people video chat in or whatever it may be. So what would you like to see? Like, do you Is there anything as a prosecutor, kind of being around and being involved in the system here, is there anything that you would like to see maybe like tweaked or anything that you think you could potentially help influence that could help, you know, keep changing things in the direction of to just make things more fine-tuned and better and, you know, maybe more accessible or easier for everyone?
Yeah, for sure. I've been thinking about this a lot, especially because of COVID, you know, the fact that we're doing these hearings online. And I, you know, when we started, I thought, why haven't we been doing this all along? You know, it's such a time saver for everyone in most cases. I won't say it's perfect in every case, but for a lot of hearings, you know, people have to take a half day off of work to drive down to the courthouse and park their car and walk in and go through security and then sit in the courtroom and then wait for their hearing to be called. And, you know, with the Zoom, it's just so much quicker. You don't have to really, you could like take your cigarette break or your, you know, your 15 minute break and do your court hearing and then go back to work. And you don't have to find someone to watch your kids for you. And you don't have to schlep them down to the courthouse. So I think that's something I would like to see continue to some degree. The other thing I thought is, I spoke at the Twin Lakes Village Hall one night and I drove there, and that is a 45 minute drive from my house, not even from the courthouse. And I thought, wow, all these people who come in for court, that's literally a half day for them. You know, when you build in that drive time and then the waiting time and then the drive back. So I think I would really like to continue doing these remote hearings, these virtual hearings, because I feel like it really benefits a lot of people, and, you know, it saves them money, and it just I think it also helps them feel a little more comfortable if they're in their own home, you know, instead of in the scary courthouse, in the scary courtroom. So yeah, I think that's what I would like to continue and tweak and continue.
Nice. So say you do end up getting the nomination and then you end up winning the election. And then in August, you're going in for the first week. Like, what would you like to get accomplished, or what would you like to do, or what would you like to maybe even just like set in motion besides just like, you know, the typical, all right, I'm here, this is the job, so we're going to start doing this. But, you know, is there anything that you feel like, or would you want to just kind of like take it in, go through, you know, whatever cases that you're going to be dealing with?
I'm sure I'll have some big plans. You know, I do think it's important to make this, you know, make it more accessible. But, you know, it's hard to know what it's like on that side of things. Circuit court judge is something very different than any of the three of us have done. So, you know, I don't want to rush to make changes being ignorant. You know, I would like to take an opportunity to see what needs to be improved, what do I want to do. You know, I certainly want to set an atmosphere in my courtroom, and that would start right away with the people that I bring in as bailiffs, with whoever would be my clerk and my court reporter. You know, we're going to treat people with respect. You know, if they have questions, we're going to do our best to answer them. We can't give legal advice. We're ethically prohibited from doing that. But we're going to create this courtroom that is a safe place for people to come to. And I would start that right away, you know, because that's just in my nature. You know, if you have a question for me, I don't care what side you're on. I'm going to try to help you if I can. I have had a homicide case where the defendant's mother, I had a conversation with her early on and answered some questions for her. And she so appreciated that even though I am prosecuting her son for homicide, she calls me to say, I'm concerned about my son in the jail. I'm afraid he might get hurt because I think there's some gangs. Can you please look into this for me? Can you make sure he's safe? Yes, I will. And I did. You know, I called who I could call and talk to them about that. She called me again and she was concerned about her son's health. And so I looked into that for her too. And that's just who I am. And that's the kind of atmosphere I would want to create right from the very beginning in my courtroom.
Bring compassion.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you might have done something wrong, but that doesn't mean I have to be, sorry, I want to swear, but I can't.
I mean, you can, but
You know, there's no need to be rude about it. Right. I can treat you respectfully, even if I don't like the choices that you've made.
Right.
No. Yes.
No, and that's good to hear because, you know, there's a lot of people have, when you're dealing with just like the courts in general, right? People have their perceptions of how things are, how people will be, you know, and how you'll be treated, right? And a lot of people, even before going in, can become discouraged about, you know, even just going there. And even dealing with, you know, cases where they're not criminal cases, you know, say you're just going to family court, right, or whatever it may be, people seem to be, you know, apprehensive about it because just the whole thing of going to court, and it's like, I've been summoned to come here, there's police around, you know, you have your robe on and stuff. It's kind of intimidating and stuff, but it's so compassion, I feel like, is because a lot of people talk about what can we do to change things and stuff like that, right? But compassion, using compassion, in my opinion, is really the only thing that we can do within the law, right? Like operating with compassion, like the law is the law, right?
Right.
So we have to look at the law for what it is, but then also kind of interpret it in a way where you're still realizing that we're still dealing with people, right? So even if you do commit a crime or whatever it may be, like you're still a person, you're still alive. Maybe I don't even like what you did, and maybe I personally may even feel like something should happen, but since you're in the position, you have to just always objectively just lead with compassion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that kind of, I want to kind of segue into, like, you know, the partisanship, I suppose, too. Just to be fair to everyone, I want to make sure that I bring this up.
Okay.
At least from what I can see, just going through, you know, people that have spoken out on your behalf or endorsed you, things like that, you seem to have, I would say, a well-balanced list of people that are endorsing you. How do you feel about partisanship on the bench or even just dealing with the courts in general, not just being the judge or just anyone in general dealing with cases that potentially can free or, you know, lock people up?
Yeah, well, I don't think partisanship has any place in a courtroom, especially from the judge. You know, you're right. I have these endorsements and I have bipartisan support. And, you know, I want people to understand that those endorsements, they're not partisan. They're people who have seen me and know me for 25 years. They've seen my work ethic. They know what I do. They know how much I care. They know how much passion I bring to what I do. And they're saying to everyone else, we're vouching for her. Like, you can trust her. If she says she's going to do this the right way, she's going to do it the right way. And I'm really proud of those endorsements. You know, those are people who know me and have seen me. They're not, in my mind, they're not partisan. So when I become a judge, if I'm elected, I'm going to do exactly what I did as a prosecutor. I'm going to make decisions based on the facts and the law and the people in front of me. And there will be a variety of individuals with different backgrounds in front of me. I'll have victims who will feel one way. I will have parents who will feel another way. And then I have, you know, the person, you know, I know we talk a lot about criminal cases, but, you know, I'll have the defendant in front of me. And I know that what happened that day is not what he or she is all about. You know, I mean, there are some cases where, you know, like in a homicide case or a child sexual assault, there's, you know, there's not much, not a lot of compassion there for,
right.
But, you know, for the vast majority of cases, you have to be fair and just accept who's in front of you and just do what you can to try to make it better. You know, I mean, protecting the community is why I became a prosecutor, protecting children. And so I would still work towards that. That would always be my primary goal, even as judge, protecting our community. But I believe in rehabilitation and I believe in prevention. And I believe that some treatment works for some people too. And, you know, that's why I think it's important to have an open mind to new ideas, because I don't know what might work, and if you can find a solution to our crime rate, I am willing to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I was in juvenile court for so long, I always thought, like, if only we could fix the family lives of some of these kids, because I just know these kids are going to go on, they're going to turn 17, 18, and they're going to become criminals and they're going to go to jail, because it, you know, I think so much of it starts in the home. But I don't know how to fix that problem. You know, we have a way of trying in juvenile court where, you know, you offer services to families, and that helps sometimes, but some families just need more.
Or receptive to it and things like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can understand that for sure. Yeah, I think that is like a big thing, right? Because you wish you could change things for people, like the cards that are dealt, I suppose. But sometimes you can't. But sometimes there's always a possibility for something to trigger or something to happen in someone's life that could set them on another path.
Right.
So, you know, always just being open to that, you know, accepting maybe some of the situations that are, like you know, said, are kind of, there's hard to kind of come back from. But a lot of these things, especially dealing with like juveniles, you know, a lot of them, like you said, it stems kind of from the family, or the home life, or the home life that may be non-existent, you know?
Right.
So it's good to hear, you know, people actually, you know, you taking that into consideration. As far as like family court being just, you know, per se, say dealing with disputes for, you know, placement or custody for children, there's a misconception, I like to say, in Wisconsin, that Wisconsin is a woman's state, right? When it comes down to who actually ends up getting placement of children most of the time, generally they say it ends up in the hands of the mother. I would say it's not always the case, but there's a lot of people, at least people that I talk to, men that I talk to, that maybe have given up at even trying just because they feel like they have no shot at all, even though they haven't even fully engaged with everything. What would you say to, you know, people out there, like, hey, you got elected, now you're the judge,
right?
But now people are afraid of you, like they may say about other people. It's like, oh, I don't even want to see her because she's just going to write me off and not even care. What would you say about people, to those people that would potentially be coming to you?
Yeah, well, I want people to know I was raised by my father. When my parents divorced, my mom moved away. We moved away, she moved away, and he raised us. There was no shared arrangement. It was just him. And you know, my dad was everything to me. I have the greatest respect for him and the commitment and the sacrifice that he made for us. So I certainly come at family court with a perspective that dads can do it. You know, they can be fabulous parents on their own or collaboratively. I am divorced myself. You know, it was an emotional thing for both my husband and I to end our marriage. But whatever hard feelings or hurt feelings we had in the beginning, we made a commitment that we were going to put them aside and we were going to do what we needed to do for our kids. And so we have worked together really well. I think it's really important for my kids to have their time with their dad. I, you know, made sure that they, you know, had their, the days were figured out, that they got there, that if I had to pick them up, I could pick them up. Because it's important. It's important for kids to have both parents. I would never think that, you know, okay, you're, because you're the man, you deserve less time or less of an opportunity with your kids, because I just don't think that's good for the kids.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And that's not even like a personal thing. It's just, you know, I just have seen it so much, and it's ruined friendships and relationships just to see people kind of like give up and like not care and stuff like that. So that's just one thing that I wanted to make sure that I ask everyone, because I want to dispel that, you know? Want people to be involved. I want people to stop, you know, just kind of thinking that they have no shot at all in being the parent that they feel like they can be, you know?
Yeah. So. I think people deserve a chance, and it's so important for kids. And, you know, maybe a couple are toxic together, but when they're apart with their kids, it could be a wonderful thing.
So before we wrap things up, I'm going to give you the floor, but before I do that, maybe you can't say much about this, but I know you were involved. You were the prosecutor in the Mark Jensen trial.
I was one of two.
And then the Donna Matthews trial as well. So how was it dealing with like the pressures of like these high profile cases?
Yeah.
Exactly. When I was doing my research and I saw the Mark Jensen, like I remember when all of that happened, and I remember it just being like this whole big thing. So how was that dealing with that before you go ahead and take the floor?
You know, it was stressful because, again, like I said, I wanted to do my best. I wanted to be prepared, and I knew how important it was to the family members, like to Julie Jensen's brothers. They're just, you know, in preparing for the case, we got to know them pretty well. They're just a great group of men who really loved their sister. And so, you know, we knew, okay, we got to do this. We got to do right by Julie. We got to do right by her brothers. They're counting on us. And so, you know, even though it's a lot of pressure, when you know you're doing it for the right reason, it just seems okay. The hard part about Jensen was I was nervous because they were live streaming. Court TV was live streaming the trial. So that felt really nerve-wracking. But, you know, once we got into court, we just got into our groove. Okay, we're doing what we need to do. And we just kind of forgot that they were all out there. So, you know, we just did what we had to do, and we did it the best way that we could. And the same thing with Donna Matthews. You know, that one I was the lead on. And so I did feel a lot of pressure on that one. But I just really worked really hard and spent God knows how many hours on it. But, you know, knowing that I was doing it for the right reason, and I was, you know, his sister was so grateful when there was a conviction, then that just makes it all better. Like, just feels good.
Awesome. Yeah.
I've got such great stories from those cases. We should do other podcasts just on those two cases.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would be open to that. That would be cool. People always ask me, like, hey, you should do like a crime podcast or something, since people love that stuff. I would definitely be open to that.
Right?
If you end up with time, you might not have time, but if you end up with some time, we definitely can do that for sure.
Yeah, I would love to. And I always thought it would be really cool, you know, because we're called so early to a homicide case, to just kind of keep an audio diary of what it's like from the very beginning until the very end. But of course, then I just get all busy and then I don't do it. But I just always thought that would be really interesting for people to see what it's really like.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an iPhone?
I do.
Just gotta do the voice memos.
All right, I'll just start.
Say, hey, I can't say it because she'll pop up all over here, but you just say the little thing that you say and say, start a voice memo, and you can get it done. So I'm going to give you the floor now. I just want to make sure you can mention anything that you wanted to mention, anything that we didn't touch on here. Of course, shout out how people can get in contact with you, get information, stuff like that as well.
Okay, sure. So I have a webpage. It's Angie4Judge, the number 4. And I'm on Facebook. I have a personal page and a campaign page that has a lot of interesting information about myself and my history. We're doing Justice Minutes now, so every Sunday I'll release a little video talking about legal issues or maybe some cases that I've handled. They'll just be short little videos, but just so people know what I've been doing for all these years. I know a lot of it has been in the Kenosha news, but a lot of it hasn't either, and I feel really strongly about those cases just as much as I do the bigger high-profile cases, because there were victims who really cared and appreciated the commitment that I brought. I prosecuted a case. It was a delayed disclosure sexual assault. A woman had been sexually assaulted by a family member when she was a child. She waited years and years to come forward. And when she finally had the courage to come forward, we had the trial, he was convicted, and she was like, the gratitude that she expressed to me was just overwhelming. And then she asked me to be the godmother to her daughter when her daughter was born. So, you know, that's what keeps me going. This is what brought me to be a prosecutor. It's what kept me in the job for all these years. And it's why I want to be judge. I want to have an impact on people's lives. I want to make them feel better, safer. You know, I think Kenosha deserves a judge that has that kind of commitment and that kind of passion. And I have 25 years of that. So, you know, I encourage you to vote for me. Come out February 16th is the primary, and then April 6th will be the election. And if you have questions, feel free to email me, to send me a message on Facebook Messenger. I've answered many questions that people have sent me, and I am grateful for all the support that I have received from people who know me and have seen my work product and know how committed I am, and even from strangers who have just kind of read articles about the cases that I've handled in the newspaper. It's just been, to me, if this goes no further after February 16th, that kind of validation is tremendous. You know, I got 900 signatures for my nomination papers, and I hardly did any of that myself. Like, you know, I think I got myself 30 signatures. And then all these people who knew me, who've worked with me, who've seen me in the paper, they got the rest of it because they felt so strongly that this is what Kenosha needs, that I'm what Kenosha needs.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the interview here. Thank you, Angelina Gabrielle, for stopping in and, you know, just spending some time with us. If, like I said, if you end up with some free time, I won't be mad if you don't. But if you do, we can definitely do those crime podcasts. That would be very, very interesting. I'd love that. Please make sure you stop by our website. That's Angie4Judge.com to get any more information. I believe they can set up if they wanted to, like, host, like, a, what would we call that? Like, a, not a campaign party or something like that.
Oh, like a virtual meeting?
Yeah, like a virtual meeting, stuff like that. Yeah, all of that is on the website, so you can figure out how to do that. You can go through all of her information, check out her list of endorsements, all of that good stuff on the website. Also, you want to make sure you check out her Facebook page, like her Facebook page, too. If you can, please. That's going to be Angelina Gabrielle for Judge on Facebook. So thank you so much for stopping by, giving us some time, relaying some information to the public here. Thank you all for tuning in. We definitely appreciate it. Like I said, please make sure you stop by our website, get all of the information that you can. Do not go into an election and vote without any information. That's why I do what I do, because I like an informed populace. So please review the interview if you can. Go get more information from our pages. And then make sure you get out there and vote on February 16th. And then, yeah, we will catch you guys in the next one. Thank you so much. It's been a good one. Like the page, share this interview if you can, and we will see you soon.
Thanks, bye. Everyone.